We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Good morning, John. How are you today?
I'm okay. Got a busy
Saturday, I know, for you.
Yeah, just a bit. We're already in the midst of it, but that's okay. My daughter is throwing rocks nearby, so which, I mean, every kid is supposed to throw rocks, right?
Of course, yes. Yeah. I have it's too long of a story to tell on here, because I don't want to make the whole thing about bad decisions I made as a child, but let's just say there's a windshield that was of a neighbor's that was replaced once when I was a kid, because I, as a kid, liked to throw rocks, so may have been a wiffle ball bat involved.
I never broke any windows. I did, however, again, story that should be on a different venue, but I did, however, get the University of Loyola to chairman.
Hello, can you hear me?
Hold on, are you there? Oh, that's not good.
I can hear you now. I think we're back.
Okay,
we're good.
Sorry, I was going from outside to inside. I don't know who heard that, but in any case,
you're good. Let's get started and see what happens.
Let's get started.
Good morning, everybody. Thank you for joining us again for another Saturday morning Spotify Green Room live stream. The rules, I think at this point, you guys know, please mute your mics if you have background noise. We're going to get as many people up here as we can, and we'll give you about 7, 8, maybe even 9 minutes. Keep the conversation lively, keep it polite and respectful, and I think that's it. John, are you ready?
I am ready, and hopefully you can hear me now. I moved back to a good Wi-Fi area.
Awesome. First, as always, it seems, Kasim, welcome to the stage.
Good morning, guys. How are you doing?
Good.
We're good, man. How you doing?
Excellent, excellent. Good morning, John. Good morning, Andrew. Thank you, as always. Congrats on the Patreon.
Thank you
very much. Yeah.
Big step. I see season 3. It's got some twists already coming, or is it season 4?
I don't know. What season are
we? It will sort of be my season 3, that's for sure. I think John season 4, officially.
For Nick's Film School, yeah, that's probably about right, yeah.
We'll call that the pilot. All right, guys. As always, thank you. I've said grace. Let's get going. Okay, I can see the name of the podcast, or obviously, and I will let everyone else, you know, chomp their teeth into that, since that will be the topic du jour. I would like to spend my few minutes talking about. And let me know if you can still hear me as I switch windows.
Yeah, no.
Okay. Yeah, you're good.
I would like to talk about that glorious list, that chart from the, I think, Market Efficiency newsletter.
Yes.
Oh my God, that list. So many thoughts and questions about that list. But in particular, as I look at the top area of that list, have we been just dummies about not spending most of our time talking about Jalen Brunson or Kendrick Nunn or fan favorite TJ McConnell this whole time?
I don't know that we've been dummies by not talking about them. I think that's probably an overstatement. I think when you see players that have like an obscene efficiency number, and they're, you know, being bandied about as like something closer to, you know, $10 million a year players, as opposed to whatever, 20 or $30 million a year player, 20 year players. I think, you know, there's reasons for that. And I think it's a matter of, and that's where I think like, you know, having a really good, smart GM and a coach that has a very clear vision and all that, you know, come into play. Like, you know, so let's start with TJ McConnell. TJ McConnell, I personally don't really see a ton of flaws in his game outside of the one very obvious one, which is he doesn't shoot
threes.
He can't
create a whole bunch of shots for himself.
Well, no, I mean, not even, okay, so obviously he doesn't, it's not just that he doesn't create behind the perimeter. He doesn't take, I mean, he takes a few threes, but he probably shouldn't. He should probably go full mid-career Tony Parker at this point, right? And just like not take any threes.
So you're saying his effective field goal percentage is as high as it is because he doesn't really take a lot of shots?
I think his effective field goal percentage is as high as it is because he's a super smart player, and when he takes a shot, he knows it's because it's a good shot. And he knows there's a pretty good probability he's going to hit that shot. And I don't think there's any fool's gold in that number, because I think if you look back over the course of his career, I think this is the player that he is, and I think he's a really good player.
So you're saying he actually is white Chris Paul?
minus the three-pointer and minus the point Goddery. But again, it's like, you know, you look at his assist numbers in how, and like those are achieved in like, I don't know what, how many minutes he played a game, 26 minutes a game, something like that.
His assist percentage is ridiculous.
Oh, it's off the charts. It's absolutely off the charts. And like there's a guy that I would personally take a long and hard look at, if I were them. And then as far as like Kendrick Nunn and Jalen Brunson, obviously Jalen Brunson's not a free agent, and they would have to trade for him. So that gets into a whole nother conversation. But I think there's different questions involved with each of these guys. Like Kendrick Nunn is real. Like if you want to talk about assist percentage, it's not great. Yeah. I mean, he's not, you know, he's been a nominal point guard in Miami just because like they've played him along, like where he's like the closest thing to a point guard in those lineups, but he's, you know, he's not a point guard. He's just a small...
exciting thing about him is that he's that high in that list and that young. So you think there's, you know, a room for improvement under the right circumstances. I would specifically like to ask about TJ and Jalen, specifically on Jalen. I remember you guys were talking about during the season that there's this whole thing about what Mavericks technically can and can't do. So where does that stand now in terms of can they, do we have a realistic chance of sneaking him away? Are the Mavericks really hamstrung?
Well, so for anybody who doesn't know what the situation is with Jalen Brunson, there's a team option for him, see, this is where the technicalities come into play. Basically, the Mavericks are in the driver's seat as far as whether they want to bring him back next season or not. And he would be back at a ridiculously small salary, like $2 million a year or something like that. The reason why it's different than with Mitch if the Knicks decide to do away with the final year of Mitch's deal, he becomes a restricted free agent, which obviously means the Knicks can match any offer. The construct of the Jalen Brunson contract is different than the Mitchell Robinson contract in that if the Mavericks decided not to bring him back next year and do away with that final team-controlled year, he would not become a restricted free agent, and he would be just an unrestricted free agent. So the Mavericks are going to bring him back next year on that dirt cheap contract. As far as whether there's any way to get him, aside from New Orleans, who I think, I mean, when we've spoken about this on past locker rooms, why there's a lot of reasons why they might be an ideal trade partner with the Knicks. I think the Mavs are probably the most natural trade partner with New York this offseason. One, because I think...
Because it worked so well for them last time.
Well, no, but here's the thing. Listen, you could argue that both teams lost that trade, but neither here nor there.
Right.
The 2023 Mavs pick, I would argue that there is no asset in the entire league that has that there is a greater difference in value between what it would be to one team and what it would be to another team. In the hands of the Mavericks, that 2023 pick would be gold because it would materially alter what kind of trade packages they would be able to put together in trying to acquire a star.
So you're simply talking about, just to cut ahead, you're simply talking about working out a deal where we let them take off the protections.
Or we just give them back the pick. Now, is Jalen Brunson worth a first-round pick? I think there is an argument that he is not. Because I think if you're looking at Jalen Brunson, I think he's a wonderful player. I think in a perfect world, if you're building your team the right way, he's probably your first guard off the bench. And I would be slightly concerned over the fact that Rick Carlisle. So listen, say what you want about Rick Carlisle. He's not a dumb coach. The fact that he basically mothballed Brunson for the end of that series, raises a slight, ever so slight red flag.
That was again, weird. Yeah.
Yeah. Again, I digress. So is Jalen Brunson worth a first round pick? Maybe, maybe not. Especially when that pick again is going to be worth a lot more to the Mavs. Now you also get into the Mitchell Robinson situation, which we've heard, and I can say this with absolute certainty. The Mavs have, they like Mitch, they've inquired, in the past, or about him. Now, are we sending Mitchell Robinson and a first-round pick for Jalen Brunson? Of course not. That's lunacy.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know exactly what the trade is, but, perhaps
okay. So for the Mavs to give up Jalen Brunson, they have to be either trying to do something, some salary cap shenanigans where they need a spot and the right amount of room or something, or...
It would have to be a three-way deal. Basically, is what I'm saying. Because if the Knicks are going to be giving, if there are two things the Knicks have that the Mavs are interested in, this pick and Mitchell Robinson, there's also other, the Knicks can help out the Mavs in another way too, which is that they're one of the few teams in the league that could happily absorb Josh Richardson's contract. I'm assuming he's going to opt into the final year of his player option because it's for $11 million and he didn't.
He's still on the Mavs?
yes, he's still on the Mavs. Wow. Well, we don't know. I mean, he has a player option, which if you asked anybody a year or 2 years ago whether Josh Richardson would decline that player option, it would be like, oh, absolutely. He's going to become an unrestricted free agency, mm-hmm. an agent. I don't know about that anymore after the year he had. So, again, that's something else the Knicks could do for the Mavs, but this is all going one way, right? It's like the Knicks could do all these things for the Mavs. The Mavs only have one thing the Knicks want. So is there some kind of a three-team trade out there that could be worked out where the Knicks end up with Jalen Brunson and other stuff, and then the Knicks are helping the Mavs out in all these ways, but maybe there's some other team that is, like, sending the Knicks other stuff, if you catch my drift.
Mm-hmm.
That's if I was thinking about realistic ways to acquire Jalen Brunson, that would be how I would be thinking because, like, the Mavs don't want the 21st pick in the draft for they'd rather I mean I don't think they would at least, but who knows?
All right, so it sounds like Jalen Brunson requires some grand level master plan.
that would be my assumption.
Can he just be had?
I mean, if I were the Knicks, I would just wait for him to hit unrestricted free agency in a year and then try to sign him.
Oh, he's still under contract?
Brunson, yes, he is under contract.
Oh, no. Oh, sorry. Yeah. I was switching to TJ.
TJ is unrestricted. So TJ for sure. That gets into the issue of like, well, if the Knicks are going to bring back Derrick Rose and they have Vildoza already on the roster and nobody thinks McConnell's a starter, then are you basically choosing McConnell over Rose?
I don't want to take up too much more time because I know the listeners are probably like hungry for more interesting Dame talk. But last thing I'll say is to piggyback off the thing that we talked about last week, where if we don't have our definite guy who's our starting point guard, then we shouldn't be trying to force somebody into that role, especially trading for somebody in that role. So there's a possibility here that with your quickly 2.0, with your Rose, with your Vildoza possibly, and with potentially a TJ McConnell, you can basically have a multiple backup point guard rotation that fills up those 48 minutes.
Yeah, something tells me that is not what they're like. Let me pitch it this way. I would be very surprised if TJ McConnell was a starting point guard for the Knicks next season. I have a tough time seeing that as the direction that this front office is going to wind up going.
If they go that route, I would see it more as Derrick Rose becomes the de facto starting point guard.
Yeah, maybe.
He just doesn't play, 70% of the first quarter. It just becomes a game of rotations.
And I think that would make a lot of sense. And as a fallback plan, I think that makes especially a lot of sense. I wonder what plan that is. Is that plan D?
Exactly.
Is that plan Q?
I see what you did there.
Yeah, there you go. Not my first rodeo. All right, thanks as always, Kasim. This was fun.
All right, you guys, have a good one.
Take care, Kasim. Next up on our Saturday morning Green Room live stream, hold on, let me find him. There he is, Mr. Stanzoni. Welcome to the stage.
Hey!
How you guys doing?
A good time. What's going on, James?
Yeah, I just wanted to talk about the draft and a little bit about free agency. So I feel like for some reason, I think Josh Giddey isn't getting enough love. I'm not sure why. He's like the only prospect who's averaging close to a triple-double, and I think just thinking, like, looking past him, I don't know. Like, I see some of the mocks have him outside the lottery, which is insane to me. He's only, 18 years old, so, he's really young. And, I mean, I understand maybe we always think, Tibbs doesn't want that young of a guy. But, I mean, if you like the guy, you take him no matter what. So, I mean, I think we need to do anything we can to get either him or who's the shooter again? Corey Kispert.
Kispert's very good. Of the two, who would you like more?
Well, they're completely different. One guy is Kispert's on the older side, right? What is he, 21 or 20?
Yeah, no.
Hello?
Yeah, no. Kispert's older. He's 21 or 20.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe Kispert, but I mean, I'll take either or. I like that other guy, Trey Murphy. I don't know. He's he's probably about the 21st pick, maybe the 19th pick, whatever it is. I just think we need to maybe take two picks and one maybe shoot for the moon and then one take a safe pick. Definitely need to look into those guys. I want to know what you guys think about them. And do you guys want Mike Conley or no?
Oh, do you think Mike Conley is going to be available? I'm not sure why you. And the fact that, given their salary cap situation, if they let him get away, they don't have any money to replace him other than one of the exceptions. So okay. I'm not considering Mike Conley a realistic option for the Knicks this summer because I just don't think he's really going to be they would have to pay him. Let me ask you, what would you pay Mike Conley to come here?
I mean, he's 33, but he's still, he's still going to be a good point guard for you. So, I don't know. I think it's the years and not really the money for me. I feel like I wouldn't want to give him more than 3 years.
I'd go 2 years for Connolly at I'd go 2 years for Connolly at like probably 45, like between 40 and 45, 50, like that. I would probably go up to 50.
Yeah, I feel like when you're doing these 2 year deals, I really don't care what the money is. I mean, obviously you don't want to give some guy like $40 million, of course, but I mean, when you're having these like short term contracts, you're not like, you could always trade them, I think, if there's 1 year left on the deal. So,
yes and no, because it's like, yeah, here's the thing. I never, even though it's a 2 year deal, like, okay, let me just give you a really quick example. And the money is not the same. So it's like, last summer, like a guy like Montrezl Harrell and a guy like Serge Ibaka, they signed contracts. And I think, I forget if those were both player options. I think they're both player options where, you know, you looked at that and you were like, well, obviously those guys are going to opt out because they like signed on like the real cheap to play with these contenders. Now, after the seasons both of them had, it's like, oh, I don't know. I guess my point is that like, and I'm not saying this is going to happen to Connolly. You could be talking about Lowry. I mean, in a much grander context, we could be talking about Chris Paul. Any of these older players or players who have had like, you know, there's a possibility that there could be a drop off due to age, injury, or some combination of both. If you sign that 2 year contract, then like that player starts out, you know, the first year with like some kind of a bad injury or whatever, or he's like on the show. It's like that automatically, like that contract becomes an albatross. You cannot trade that contract, you know, at that like first trade deadline if you really need to move money, or at least it becomes an exorbitant thing to try to move. You follow what I'm saying?
Yeah, well, isn't that kind of what happened to Connolly? Like last year, in the beginning of the year, he was like injured.
Well, it did, but there was lots of talk about like, oh, the Jazz are going to try to move on from him. I never bought any of that myself personally, but you know, whatever. Let's get back to your prospects. So Giddey, maybe I'm reading too much into like the reputation of like World Wide West and like the type of players that he likes. We just got through an entire year where if you listen to Tibbs carefully, every time he spoke, he was talking about how we need, like, the shooting is such an important part for us. Like, we need to be okay with the shooting. The biggest part for us was how guys improved as shooters over the offseason. Talk about RJ improving as shooters. Talk about Julius improving as shooter. All these guys. I have a tough time seeing them trading up for a point guard because you're going to need to trade up to get him who, by the book, can't shoot. Kispert, I think, is very interesting because I have I'm not saying he's going to fall, but if there's a guy that I could see falling further than he should, it's Kispert. The only other guy, and I think of him only because you mentioned Giddey's age, is Jaden Springer out of Tennessee. So he's the youngest college player in the draft. He has been apparently blowing away workouts. He started the year mocked as like a top 10, borderline top 10 pick. Fell all the way in the minds of most people to like bottom of the first round or like 20s or whatever. He wasn't bad last year. He just like didn't pop. And apparently he's fully healthy now. I think the ankle was bothering him during the season. That looks better. Young kid, lots of potential. That's the way that I would go. Andrew, do you want to chime in for 2 minutes?
Yeah, I got this. So I'd be honest, James, I'm not the one to help you out with the draft. I'm someone that depends on the John Mackeys and the Jake Rosens and the Jonathan Washmans, even the Chris Persianins for draft talk, as far as expertise goes. The thought on Mike Conley, though, I have a similar thought. If you look at the carousel of point guards that might go around, and I'll throw this back at you, what if because Miami goes big game hunting, even if that big game hunting isn't Dame and it's Kyle Lowry, and then Goran Dragic becomes available, would you be interested in him?
I would. I would definitely. I've always liked him.
It's like the same principle, right? Like a guy that can come off the bench. Like imagine him and D Rose as like your two veteran point guards next year.
I think he's a Tibbs guy, definitely.
Mm-hmm. I've been going back and forth since Macri's mini pod over on Patreon that the point guard carousel, and if you're thinking of options at point guard that don't cost you everything like Dame would. And I mean, don't fully get in the way of Quickley's opportunity to be a one if they want to play him at the one more often. I don't know. I think Dragic could be to the Knicks what he was to the Heat, and as a result, still lets you play Kendrick Nunn important minutes and Tyler Hero important minutes, and this way Quickley can play important minutes. That's, I think, the biggest takeaway from this past week of all the rumors. I don't know how you feel about Colin Sexton or anything else, but all the rumors going around is like, well, let's not forget we have some guys here that we'd like to see take big steps too.
Can I just interject on Dragic real quick?
Yes, please.
He's another guy that if I thought he could be had for a nice size 1 year deal, like sign, he's probably number one on my 1 year slight overpay list. I've never gotten the sense that he would be a Tibbs / West guy. Do you,
James?
I mean, I don't know what West thinks, but I know. I mean, doesn't he get to the basket well or no?
He drives a lot.
I mean, I think Tibbs likes that. I mean, veteran guy, very experienced, and I mean, he's been healthy the last couple of years, right?
He's been healthy enough. You know, obviously the bubble was different because he was healthy for three rounds and was arguably their second best player for three rounds.
He was, yeah.
And then game one of the finals, he got hurt. And if you ask a Miami Heat fan, they will tell you they beat the Lakers in the bubble if Goran Dragic doesn't get hurt.
Miami Heat fans do a lot of shit, though, so it's stupid.
Yeah, I actually have to go, but one last name I don't want him, but I could see the Knicks getting thrown like with rumors with him and taking a flyer on him. I know we talked about this guy a lot last year, Victor Oladipo.
James.
No, I don't. I'm not advocating for him, but I mean, if it's a cheap contract, I could see the Knicks not finding anyone in free agency and maybe throwing him something for a couple of years. I don't know. It's not James, my preference.
Over under, James, is Victor Oladipo getting more or less than 1 year? Or, well, he can't get less than 1 year. Is he getting more than 1 year, and is he getting more than $10 million?
Why?
I mean, I think someone will give him $10 million. I'm not sure, though. It's tough. It's, I don't know. It depends with how the medicals or how – like what's going on around in the league, and I know some people, you know, would know more about his health than us. So I mean, I don't know. It's a difficult decision. I could just see the Knicks having a lot of money to spend and not really knowing what to do with it.
I'll put it to you this way, James. If you told me I had the option of giving Victor Oladipo $5 million next year or lighting $5 million on fire,
$5 million to come back.
Whoa. I would rather just light $5 million on fire than pay Alfred Payton also. But I feel like you're basically doing the same thing with Oladipo. Anyway, James, as always, man, thank you for your contributions. We appreciate you.
Yeah, thank you guys. Thanks for taking my request. Thank you guys.
No problem.
Of course, James. Thank you.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top three things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th. Hosted by Kevin Hart, the seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I just got to give a shout out. He's obviously not going to come up here unless he wants to come up here. He has the floor. But last week we were told that Mensa is tying the knot today. And I said no excuses. Like, you need to be here. Guess who was in the chat a little earlier? I'm here, Andrew. Shout out to Mensa. Congratulations, buddy. All the best. Enjoy the day. And I expect your take on Dame Lillard or something else. In a few minutes. There you go.
The only piece of advice I have for Mensa is never go to sleep angry at your partner. Always make up before you go to sleep.
There you go. Look at you giving out advice. Next up, Jonas. Welcome to the stage, sir.
Seven happy years.
I can see it. You guys look extremely happy. You know, two kids later, I would hope you guys are still happy. Jonas, welcome to the stage.
What's up? Can you hear me?
Jonas, yeah, Jonas, we can hear you. What's up?
Okay. So I suppose we should start getting a little bit into the Dame thing. Let's upset some people. I don't want them to trade for Dame, but let's say the hypothetical scenario, Dame's like, I really want to go to the Knicks, whatever. They get to keep RJ and they get to keep one of Mitch or Quickly. Who are you keeping in that scenario?
I'm not the person to ask this, but if in this scenario, if this is what happens, I would rather keep Quickly. I don't think I'm the one that doesn't think you're getting Dame without trading RJ, though. So
I mean, I agree. I don't think you're getting him without trading RJ, but like in this hypothetical.
In this hypothetical, I would rather keep Quickly. I think it's far more likely that you'd be able to keep the center. That is just a much more replaceable position, has so much uncertainty with his health and his contract. And the upside of Emmanuel Quickly does make it possible that you could sell the Blazers in this scenario as you're getting Emmanuel Quickly back, you know?
Right.
Can I
pause it? I want to pause it something real quick. Can you hear me okay, by the way?
Yeah, sure. Now we can, yes. Okay, we could.
Did you guys see the Robert Randolph of? Oh shoot, damn it! Hang on one sec. Did you guys see the Robert Randolph tweet?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay. Obviously, Robert Randolph is an idiot.
Already. But like, I think the Knicks are putting out what he tweeted. In short, which is that they want to keep RJ, Mitch, and Quickly out of any deal. I just want to throw that out there for the record.
Right.
Awesome.
Well, I just think I don't know. I feel like if we trade for Dame and we kept Quickly, don't you at some point get like a little bit of diminishing returns on what they both do?
What do you mean?
So I feel like their skill set kind of overlaps, doesn't it? Like, Quickly is, you know, he's an outside pull-up shooter who doesn't really get to the rim a ton.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, Dame is like the whatever, the supercharged version of that, who actually can get to the rim a lot better, right?
Right.
If you kept quickly and you said, okay, well, we can probably get away with playing them together for like 10 minutes, and then Dame averages like whatever, 36 minutes a night, so quickly gets 22 minutes a night. I don't know how. I think what Mitch brings in that scenario, where you're like, well, we have our defensive anchor, we don't need to worry about that, we can give him an extension and we have our center for the next however many years, and we don't need to worry about that. I feel like in that scenario, wouldn't that be a little bit more valuable than keeping quickly?
It's a fair point. I mean, the comps that quickly got a lot of last year, early on when he was having some of his moments, were CJ McCollum, that maybe that could be his peak. So, I mean, depending on how well you think McCollum and Lillard played together, my philosophy with centers across the board is going to be that they're replaceable, that unless they're specifically ones like Mitch, where I do value his defense, I'm not trying to put down his defense, I look at what Nerlens Noel provided after Mitch went out. Yeah, in the playoffs, I would have much rather had Mitch guarding that pick and roll that seemed unstoppable, but I don't necessarily think the Knicks aren't also just the four seed with Mitch in there instead. Yeah. So it's like, look what Taj was able to provide in the postseason. And, you know, that's our third center there. So I value guards that can stretch the floor, guards that can shoot the lights out, especially on a rookie contract like quickly would be. I do think it's a fair point, though.
Well, let's also, again, I think we oftentimes get caught in having, let me rephrase that, not having the wrong conversation, but we get stuck on the wrong conversation. So Emmanuel Quickley is a guard who may or may not be a point guard, right? His playmaking, and whether or not his playmaking is going to advance to the point where you feel comfortable putting him out there at the one and having him essentially run an offense for long stretches of time. We don't know whether that's ever going to come. You could be very high on Quickley. You could be very low on Quickley. At the very least, that's still a question mark. But what he is, undoubtedly, is a guard who can, like you just said, Andrew, shoot the lights out of the ball, and he's more than capable of putting the ball on the floor. Can he? Whether he could get all the way to the rim or not is like of less consequence to me than the fact that he can put the ball on the floor, he could drive. He is a threat from the short mid-range at the very least, and I expect that floater only to improve. And, you know, he doesn't have tunnel vision. This, you know, this isn't Jordan Clarkson. He could make a pass. So we just got through watching an NBA playoffs where those sorts of players were absolutely the most valuable guys that you could have. You know, Seth Curry was the second most important player for Philadelphia in that series. And, like, tell me what's the difference between Seth Curry and Emmanuel Quickley. I understand they're not perfect comps, but, like, those are very similar players. You got Quickley for three more years at, like, 2 point whatever. It averages out to $2 million a year. Mitchell Robinson, I'm very high on Mitch's defense, as is everybody, but man, like, it's, to what Andrew said, I'm just going to parrot it. Like, you can find centers, like, you can get them and get guys who could do a good job. And then we have, and again, it always dips back into the Obi conversation, right? If they truly believe in Obi Toppin and they want to make Obi Toppin a part of this future, which I am not convinced is not the case. I believe they're high on him.
I don't think they're just going to give him away for nothing. That's like, no, I think they want to.
I would even go a step further, and I would say I think I said it on, I don't know, I record too many things nowadays, so I don't know where I said
it. You said it on our Patreon pod in particular.
The death of Obi Toppin as a New York Knicks, you know, future cornerstone has been greatly exaggerated. I think they're still high on him. I think they want to invest in his future, you know. So I think that factors into it as well.
Right. And one last thing, that what happened if the Blazers traded Dame? They didn't trade him to the Knicks. They traded him wherever. Would you want them to kick the tires on CJ McCollum? Do you think that's worthwhile?
Yeah, I mean, I'm not giving up the farm as far as assets to get him.
But
because I think, you know, it's so tough because,
like,
there's asset valuation.
I promise I won't go on too long about this because I think people are bored out of their minds when I get into the shit. But very briefly, asset valuation in the NBA is really difficult when you talk about players who are, like, very good players, but they're still slightly overpaid. Like, if CJ McCollum was a free agent today, like, literally this summer, can we all agree that he would not receive a three-year contract for $100 million? I think we're all in agreement on that.
Yeah, I mean, but I think, isn't there an argument to make that you're like, well, maybe he's like a lot better when he doesn't share the court with Dame, because he plays a lot better when Dame doesn't play. I mean, stats wise,
I think
there could be a lot of reasons for that, which we don't really need to get into now, but
sure, you could make that argument. But I guess he's still a 6 foot tall or whatever, 6'1", 6'2", guard who is not a point guard. And he's
not having him initiate your offense as plan A. He can initiate bench units. Like, of course, we've seen him do that. And to your point, he's very good at that.
I guess my point is that even with that being said, like, he's overpaid, you still have to pay a premium, generally speaking, to get guys, even if it is acknowledged that they are getting paid more than they're worth, like, if they're good enough. So, like, it makes the conversation about, like, all right, well, what are we giving Portland to obtain him? Like,
I don't know.
Is the 19th pick in the draft, would they, like, hang up the phone? Would they take that and run? Like, I genuinely don't know the answer to that question.
No,
but that's where I'm at.
No. Okay, well, that's all I had. Thanks for that.
Yeah.
Jonas is always my man. Thank you. Oh, and he dipped. Camille, let's get you up here. Welcome to the stage, sir.
Hey, guys, can you hear me?
Yeah, fine. We're good. Love, as always, the Sprewell icon.
Always been my favorite player, man. Well, good morning, guys. Nice to talk to you again. I was actually just calling in, or tapping in, however you want to say it. I have 2 points. It's either the Dame trade or Colin Sexton. Which would you rather start off with, I guess?
You pick, Andrew.
Let's talk about sex, baby.
So just for me, man, I'm not, and this might ruffle some feathers with certain Knicks fans, I'm not the biggest fan of going after him like that in terms of bring him in, then you're going to have to extend him and pay him all that money. And people obviously are throwing Obi into the trade already. And I mean, it is what it is. People are like, oh, Obi's going to be Julius's backup. He's not going to get enough minutes. How are you going to really evaluate him? The thing is, the biggest thing to me is that you don't know what Obi is yet. And obviously, and people have such knee-jerk reactions after 1 year. Like, if he didn't have a great rookie season. Okay.
Can I give you a comp?
Yeah, of course. Real quick.
And it's something I'm surprised I haven't, like, hammered home this week as much as I probably should have. But when Domantas Sabonis was traded from the Thunder to the Pacers, he had just spent a year being a spot-up three-point shooter in an offense that did not give him any opportunities whatsoever to do any of the things that he was good at doing. He was the 11th pick in the draft, so, you know, not a great draft, but still, you know, lottery pick. And then he got traded to Indiana, and everybody was like, oh, shit. So I just want to throw that out there real quick.
No, and listen, I completely understand. And one of the biggest things that Obi needs, what I think he needs, I mean, you could tell he didn't have a point guard to help facilitate any offense to him. I mean, obviously we had Peyton, and nobody, I mean, anybody in their right minds does not like Alfred Payton for the Knicks, or maybe in the NBA for that matter. But as soon as Derrick Rose was came in, he understood that he needed to get the rookie the ball in order for him to do well. And you saw him start facilitating to him, and he was the only one really, him and Burks were the only one that really looked for him for lobs. And that's when Obi started eating. So, I mean, that's my biggest thing. I don't think it's the need for the biggest thing for the Knicks to go ahead, give up Obi, give up a few picks for Colin Sexton. I think that if you ever trade Obi, build up his value, I guess, for the next year or two, then add additional picks, then go get that big star to pair with Julius with the next person or have you. I just don't think sex is the guy you go after. that makes sense to you guys.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I'll just speak real quick and then I'll turn it over to Andrew for his thoughts. But like the worst, like the NBA is no different than the stock market. Like you buy low and you sell high. You're not, I mean, but this is, so having said that, you would have said a year ago that had the Knicks traded Kevin Knox either during his second season or after his second season, like, oh, that's stupid. They'd be selling, they're selling low on him.
Yeah, I don't know about that. I mean, at least to me, I don't know about that.
Like, okay, no, that's fair.
Knox's body language since he came into the league, as soon as he misses a shot, head goes straight down, and he just runs back up court. Doesn't even look for what's going on. That's just my personal opinion.
OB's the complete opposite. Like, right. OB, positivity, yes, 1,000%. The only other thing I will say, and I'm saying this, and I don't think I believe this point, but I do want to just throw it out there because it is a point, is you can argue that Sexton's value is low right now. I also think you could argue that him just having like 22 years old, 24 points a game, like that alone, maybe his value is a lot higher than what it is because he achieved that on a dog shit team. So that's what
I'm saying, John. I've told this a bunch of people. Colin Sexton's points per game or the stats, obviously they're going to be inflated. He's on a shitty team. Like, obviously, the points have to come from somewhere. Tim Hardaway Jr. 3 years ago was our best player. Now he's the third best option on another team. I mean, like, if you're on a shitty team, your points are going to be inflated. I mean, that's just my take on it. I mean, I don't know.
Tim Hardaway Jr. didn't average 24 a game.
I get that, but he was our number one option, though, right? And I'm not saying Colin Sexton and Tim Hardaway Jr. are the same people at all. But I think that when you're on, and I'm not saying that Colin Sexton is a scrub by any means. I just don't think he's the guy that you go out and get, and then you're going to have to extend him and pay them, $165 million. That's what they're saying. That's what I read. I mean, he's just not the guy that you extend to that price point. That's just my take.
Yeah, Andrew, go.
I mean, my thoughts are out there. I'm not giving up on OB by doing this,
right.
But this DeMontis Sabonis comp, which, like, I've heard it before, also meant he went to a team that let him play. On the Knicks, he's Julius Randle's backup. Now, if there is a world where Tibbs is willing to play OB at the five, which, if you listen to our recent Patreon pod, there may be a world, which then changes the entire conversation. But I was begging for Tibbs to, when Mitch went down, when Noel went down, please, let's throw this kid out there at the five, and he wasn't doing it. If he's gonna, then yeah, that's different. Obi can stretch the floor at the five. Whether he can guard the five is a much more important question to me than whether he can play the five on offense.
I think it's notable that when Tibbs got desperate in the playoffs, he turned to that.
Weren't they down by 24 at that point? It was just to see what it looks like.
They were down by a goodly
goodly amount. Camille, I'm not anti-Obi. I want to make that clear. And I'm not even, like, extremely pro-Sexton. Like, I get what you're saying about good stats, bad team.
Yeah.
Just remember the conversations we were having about Julius Randle. I know I would have traded Julius Randle for, like, tickets to a matinee of Space Jam 2 a year ago.
And just to let you know, I watched it last night. Absolutely terrible. I'm sorry.
Right there with you. Okay. like, here we are. He's now, like, the best player on a team that was the 4 seed because of the team that was put around him. The trade for Sexton, in my opinion, would be more of a gamble that they can do the same thing with a guy that's already shown he can do the thing that a lot of guys on this team can't. It's put the ball in the basket. Now, like, the whole point of a Dame trade that people are against is we'd like to see these guys grow. If the only thing that's not growing is your backup power forward, and you're getting a guy that can score 24 a game, why can't he also grow with RJ, with Quickly, with, you know, Mitch still on the team, and then obviously with Randle. My thought on it, though.
And listen, this will be my last point on Colin, and then I'll move on to Dame. One of the big things to me about Colin also, I mean, what was it, last year? His teammates and the coaching staff, all concerns about that he doesn't know how to play organized ball. Obviously, again, he's scoring with 24 points a game, great. But if you bring him into Tibbs' system, he's not doing what Tibbs wants. I mean, obviously, Tibbs, I think, gets the most out of players. And we overachieved this year, if you really want to be, like, brash about it. We overachieved. And you bring in Colin Sexton, you overachieve again. But, like, I think he's not the guy that's going to get us over the hump. That's just my take.
It's a completely fair point. It's why anything I've said about Sexton is, like, this isn't a no-brainer. I just understand if, like, I see the brains in it, at least, you know?
I got you. And I mean, facilitating also, I don't know if he's, I don't know. I'm just a no on.
Well, he wouldn't be a point guard. He'd be your two guard. He'd be a replacement for Bullock, not for Alfred Payton, you know?
Yeah. All right, so just moving on to Dame. I don't see us getting Dame. I don't think that's ever going to, like, at least with this, like, how the trade market is and us giving up the farm. I honestly think Golden State probably has, like, the best trade offer if they really wanted to do it in terms of kicking the tires on Andrew Wiggins, Wiseman.
And I agree.
But I'm going to throw out a hypothetical trade. And I know that someone brought up the C.J. McCollum point earlier. And you guys can laugh it out of the green room if you want to, but say Damian Lillard goes to Philly, CJ McCollum goes to Dallas, and both Ben Simmons and Kristaps Porzingis go to Portland. Obviously, some picks and, like, other players in there. But what do you guys think about that type of trade? I think it kind of works out for Philly. They get their number, the main guy of the deal. Dallas gets the great second option for Luka, and then Portland kind of gets good players that could kickstart where they're going.
So wait, let me. CJ is going to Dallas. I just want to make sure I got that right.
CJ is going to Dallas. Ben Simmons and Kristaps Porzingis go to Portland, and then Philly gets Damian Lillard.
I mean, speaking of lighting things on fire, I think I would light my organization on fire before I entrusted it to those two, you know, yahoos. Yeah. Andrew, thoughts?
Can I just Ben Simmons and KP in Portland, two guys that, like, love. See, I've never met either of them, so I hate doing this as, like, a fan from afar, but who appear to be people that love the idea of being called a superstar. Now they have the amenities of Portland, Oregon. No offense to anybody that lives in Portland, Oregon, but it's not Philadelphia.
Man, I want to see that happen. I want those two to be on the same team. Please let that happen. I would love that.
But thanks again, guys, for having me on the call today. Love what you guys have been doing.
Thanks.
I'll call in a couple weeks later or something.
Thank you, Kamal. Call
you, man.
Every week if you want. Yeah, call every week.
Have a good one.
All righty. Next up, Robert, welcome to the stage.
What's up, guys? How you doing? Wanted to shout you guys out for the Patreon. Congratulations. I think I pay my therapist a lot more money than $7 a month. And you guys do very similar things for me, so thank you very much.
That is
the least you could do.
The highest of praise. Thank you.
Thank you, guys. So anyway, I wanted, not to get too kinky, I wanted to get a little role play question in. And thinking you guys are Leon Rose right now. You're running the war room on draft night. And you're trying to trade up. It seems like the Knicks would like to trade up. A lot of reports for that. And say nobody's biting for 19 and 21. What do you guys pivot to? Do you take, you know, two players? Do you take a third player at 32? Do you try to package those picks for an NBA player right now? What direction do you guys go with that?
So wait, the hypothetical is no one in, like, the 9 to
13 range?
Yeah, I was about to, okay, yeah. 13.
Yeah.
I mean, it's tough to answer in a vacuum because what veteran can I get for one or the two of, I will say this. I think the Knicks would sooner sell one of those picks for 75 cents on the dollar in terms of, like, asset return, then make all three picks. That's my gut feeling. Andrew, what do you think?
Say the question again.
Basically, I don't expect us being able to trade up. I think there are a lot of teams with a lot more picks, like Oklahoma City, who, if they see a player they want, like a Moses Moody, a Davion Mitchell, they just go up and get them because they have so many more picks than us. So yeah. In my mind, I'm thinking, it's draft night and we can't trade up. What is Leon? What is plan B? What is plan C? With those picks, I would just go take two wings, and kind of roll with them and see what they come out to. But I also wonder, what do you guys think the value of 1921 are, on the market for a player? You mentioned Jalen Brunson before. I'm a fan of him. What would you do? What would you pivot to for plan B if you can't trade up?
I'll have another comment. I'll let Andrew answer first, and then I'll have one other thought.
Well, we've been hearing what the value is. Colin Sexton with another player could be what the value is. Somebody like that that's near restricted free agency that doesn't have a lot of years of control. Something like that. If you want to pair them together, I don't know how much higher you're jumping in this draft. The Warriors at 14, if you were like dead set on a guy at 14 is going to be the guy, you could pair 19 and 21 together and try and get and Knox or whatever, even that's selling incredibly low on Kevin Knox. That's my thought as far as trading up. My thought as far as, I keep forgetting, I try not to forget they also have 32, which is like a late first. I don't know if Tibbs would light Brock Aller on fire, drop him off a building. But if they draft three rookies, I think he would lose his mind.
Here's where I go back and lean on. Look, are we sure that the Knicks have the most functional, front office and coaching staff in terms of how they go about making their decisions? No, I'm not going to sit here and say that. I think they're, they're a group of guys figuring shit out. But I do think that Leon hears all the opinions, considers all the angles, and then it tries to make the best decision. And I just, from an asset management perspective, I don't think you're going to draft three rookies if you're only going to, maybe you'll play one of them significant minutes, and I just don't see a world where they play more than one rookie significant minutes. So if that's the case, that's why I keep going back to I don't see them playing an asset devaluation game, unless I'm completely misreading this front office's intentions as far as they're thinking 10-year plan type. I mean that's an exaggeration, but you get what I'm saying. Just in terms of the value of the 19th to the 21st pick, okay, so for example, can the 19th pick get you, Marcus Smart? I don't know, maybe. If the Blazers decide, I'm not saying they're going to go after this guy because it would involve what they do with Mitch and the whole thing, but if the Blazers decide to blow it up, could it get you, Yusuf Nurkic? Maybe. Both of those guys are fourth starters on a really, really, really good team. Nurkic is the better player. He probably wants out of Portland. Maybe that fight. But that kind of level of player on an expiring contract, I could see maybe a pick like that getting you. Do you want one of I'm trying to think of other guys who fall into that range, or that player archetype. There's not a ton of them out there who are fairly paid. They're in the low teens. That's why it's tough. It's tough to come up with fake trades.
Robert, anything else?
No, I just thank you guys for doing what you do, and I'll catch you later.
Thank you, Sharon.